Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a subject near and dear to many, education. Specifically, we're diving into the current state of affairs in Vermont's education system. Our compass for this journey, the 802 Ed newsletter, a treasure trove of insights for anyone interested in the Green Mountain State's schools.
Yeah, it's like peeking behind the curtain and seeing what's really happening in Vermont classrooms. From policy debates to the everyday challenges teachers and students face.
So this 802 Ed newsletter, what's the spoop? Paint a picture for our listener. What kind of content are we dealing with?
It's a vibrant mix. You've got news articles, research summaries, policy updates, and even a dash of humor. It covers a wide spectrum, from school leadership and student well-being to innovative programs popping up around the state. It's a fantastic pulse check on Vermont's educational landscape.
Okay, so let's jump right into one of the newsletter's recurring themes, student well-being. The 802 Ed highlighted some pretty concerning findings from the Vermont Youth Risk Behavior Survey. What were some of the red flags that stood out?
Well, the survey revealed some alarming trends, especially around mental health. We're seeing a significant increase in students reporting feelings of sadness, hopelessness, and even considering suicide. This isn't just a blip on the radar. It's a signal that we need to prioritize student mental health.
It paints a pretty stark picture, doesn't it? And it makes you wonder what factors are contributing to this rise in mental health challenges among students.
It's a complex issue, of course, but the survey also sheds light on other areas of concern. There are anxieties around safe sex practices and a pervasive feeling of not belonging among many students. It's like a domino effect. One area of well-being impacts another, and it all ties back to the overall school environment.
And speaking of the school environment, one quote from an Education Week article really struck me. It said, "We are no longer an educational institution, we are social services." That feels particularly relevant in light of the student well-being data, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It speaks to the immense pressure schools are facing to address a growing list of social and emotional needs, often with limited resources. It raises some tough questions. Are schools adequately equipped to handle this? Is this shift in expectations sustainable? What does it mean for the future of education?
It makes me think of that proposed law in New Hampshire, the one mentioned in 802 Ed, allowing schools to sue parents for failing to address bullying. While it might sound extreme, does it reflect this desperation some schools feel in trying to handle these complex issues?
It's definitely a controversial approach, but it does underscore the feeling of being overwhelmed that many educators are experiencing. They're grappling with issues that extend beyond the traditional boundaries of the classroom, and they're often left feeling like they're fighting an uphill battle.
Speaking of uphill battles, the newsletter also paints a pretty concerning picture of the financial landscape for Vermont schools. It seems like they're facing a perfect storm of challenges.
It's true. Several articles in 802 Ed highlight this financial strain. You've got the teachers union proposing tax relief to fund schools, a de facto emergency declared by Senate leadership on education funding, and even concerns about school construction funding being up in the air.
Let's break that down for our listener. What does a de facto emergency in education funding actually look like in practice?
It's a signal that the situation is dire. It's just as schools are struggling to cover basic operational costs, potentially leading to program cuts, staff layoffs, and a decline in the quality of education. Think about it. Aging buildings, rising costs for everything from textbooks to heating, and stagnant budgets. It's a recipe for a real crisis.
And it's not just about the numbers on a spreadsheet, right? It's about the impact on real people, teachers struggling to make ends meet, students missing out on opportunities, and communities feeling the strain on their local schools.
Precisely. One article in VT Digger really brought this home. It featured a former facilities manager directly addressing the legislature about the impact of this economic climate on schools. They talked about leaky roofs, outdated equipment, and the constant struggle to make do with less. It's a powerful reminder that these funding challenges have real-world consequences for everyone involved in education.
This financial strain feels like it's impacting everything. Even school construction funding seems uncertain. The newsletter even included a reader poll asking for predictions on how the legislature will handle it this session.
It really underscores the level of uncertainty surrounding education funding in Vermont right now. And this uncertainty creates a ripple effect, impacting everything from teacher morale to long-term planning for school districts.
So we have this backdrop of financial woes and student well-being concerns. But amidst these challenges, the 802 Ed also highlighted a Supreme Court ruling that could significantly impact schools. It involved free speech rights for school staff, right?
Yes. The Lynch v. Freed case. This ruling clarifies how the First Amendment protects school employees when they post on social media, even on their personal accounts. Now, you might be thinking, well, that's interesting, but why should I care?
I'm all ears. Help our listener understand why this case matters.
What's fascinating here is that this ruling has the potential to reshape the landscape of school climate and student-teacher relationships. It raises questions about what constitutes appropriate online behavior for educators, how much oversight schools can have over personal social media activity, and even the potential chilling effect on teachers' willingness to engage in online discussions about education.
So it's not just about legal technicalities, it's about the potential impact on the day-to-day dynamics within schools.
Exactly. It's a complex issue with far-reaching implications that are still unfolding. We're talking about the very nature of communication and boundaries in the digital age, and how those boundaries play out within the educational context.
Okay, so we've got financial pressures, concerns about student well-being, and now this legal ruling that could shake things up even further. It's a lot to process, but the newsletter also highlighted a more localized issue, a community grappling with the potential closure of a school.
Yes, a VT Digger article delved into the situation, illustrating the incredibly difficult decisions facing school boards across the state. Declining enrollments, budget constraints, shifting demographics, these factors are forcing tough conversations about consolidating schools, which can be incredibly emotional and divisive for communities. The VT Digger piece did a great job capturing the human side of this issue. It's not just about bricks and mortar. It's about the heart of a community, the sense of identity tied to a local school, and the disruption this kind of closure can cause for families and students.
It's a reminder that education policy decisions, even though seemingly focused on numbers and logistics, have a profound impact on the lives of real people.
Absolutely. And these decisions are playing out against a backdrop of broader trends in education. The 802 Ed also highlighted research from the Hechinger Report that questions the value of calculus in high school.
Okay, that piqued my interest. Why are we questioning calculus all of a sudden?
Well, the research suggests that while college admissions officers see calculus as a gold standard, many college professors don't actually consider it essential for student success. So it raises some interesting questions about curriculum design and whether we're prioritizing the right things in high school.
So are we setting students up for success in college, or just success in getting into college? That's a crucial distinction.
Exactly. And it prompts us to think about what skills and knowledge truly matter for students' future success, both in higher education and in the workforce. It's a conversation that goes beyond just calculus, touching on the very heart of what we value in education.
And speaking of valuable things, the 802 Ed also pointed out some of the smaller, everyday things that can impact learning. Those little interruptions that can add up to significant lost instructional time.
Yes. That Education Week article really resonated with me. It's not talking about major disruptions.
Yeah.
But rather, those seemingly insignificant things, announcements, transitions between activities, even just waiting for materials to be passed out. It's death by a thousand paper cuts.
But wouldn't a seasoned teacher be able to manage those transitions smoothly? It's all part of classroom management, isn't it?
You would think so. But the research suggests that these little moments of lost time accumulate over the course of a school year, and they can significantly impact instructional time. It's about being more intentional and mindful of how we structure our classrooms and our days to maximize learning.
So it's about sweating the small stuff when it comes to instructional time. Makes sense. Now, shifting gears a bit. The newsletter also featured a couple of really interesting professional development opportunities for educators.
There were a couple that really stood out. One was a 30-credit program focused on East Asian studies for K-12 educators. It's a pretty substantial commitment, meeting throughout the spring in both Rutland and St. Johnsbury.
Wow, that sounds intense. What kind of educator would sign up for a program like that?
It's designed for anyone who wants to deepen their understanding of East Asian cultures and history, whether they're a classroom teacher, a specialist, or even an administrator.
So it's about going beyond the textbook and gaining a richer, more nuanced understanding of a different part of the world. That could be transformative for both the educators and their students.
Absolutely. And the other opportunity that caught my eye was the School Ambassador Fellowship offered by the U.S. Department of Education. This is a year-long program where educators get involved in developing national education policy.
Wait, so teachers get a seat at the table where federal education policy is being made. That sounds incredible. What's the catch?
Well, it is a significant time commitment, requiring educators to take a year away from their classrooms. But it's an amazing opportunity for teachers to have a voice at the national level and to gain a deeper understanding of how policy is shaped.
Did you say teachers? That makes me think you've had some firsthand experience with this fellowship, haven't you?
I have. I was actually part of the first cohort of this program, and I can tell you, it was an incredibly rewarding experience. It's not for the faint of heart, but if you're passionate about education and want to make a difference on a larger scale, I highly recommend it.
See, this is what I love about these deep dives. We get the insider perspective.
Okay.
So we've been talking a lot about Vermont, but the newsletter also touched on some interesting initiatives happening in other states. What caught your attention?
Well, New Jersey is overhauling their education funding formula, which is always a big deal. And Connecticut is experimenting with a child care incubator to try and boost early childhood education.
An incubator for childcare. What does that even mean?
It's a fascinating concept. They're providing support and resources to help new childcare providers get started and thrive, addressing the shortage of quality early childhood education options. It's like a startup hub for childcare businesses.
So they're investing in the early years, recognizing that quality care and education in the first few years of life can have a huge impact on a child's long-term trajectory. That's smart.
It is. And then there's California, which is incorporating childcare into their apprenticeship programs. It's a way to remove barriers to participation and make it easier for people to enter these programs, recognizing the challenges of finding affordable and reliable childcare.
So it's about thinking outside the box and finding creative solutions to support both families and the workforce. I love that.
It's about recognizing that education doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's interconnected with all these other aspects of our lives, from our families to our jobs to our communities.
Okay, so recognizing that the best approach to technology in the classroom will vary depending on the age of the students, the educational goals, and the input of parents and teachers.
Right. It's about finding that sweet spot where technology enhances education without becoming a distraction.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into Vermont education. What are some of the key takeaways that stand out to you? What's the big picture here?
Well, one thing that struck me is the interconnectedness of all these issues. We've talked about student well-being, funding challenges, curriculum debates, legal rulings, and even cheese heists. But when you step back, you see how these seemingly disparate topics are all woven together, impacting the fabric of education in Vermont.
It's like a tapestry, isn't it? Each thread contributes to the overall picture.
Exactly. And this tapestry reflects a larger national conversation about the state of education. The challenges and opportunities facing Vermont schools are mirrored in communities across the country.
So, what can our listener, who might not be in Vermont, take away from this deep dive?
I think the biggest takeaway is the importance of paying attention to what's happening in your own community. Attend school board meetings. Talk to teachers and administrators. Get involved in local advocacy groups. The future of education is shaped not just by policymakers, but by engaged citizens who care about their schools.
That's a powerful call to action. And maybe, just maybe, we can all learn something from the innovative approaches and dedicated educators we've encountered on this journey through Vermont's educational landscape.
I think so. It's a reminder that even amidst challenges, there's a lot of creativity, passion, and resilience within the education community. And who knows? Maybe we'll even find a way to incorporate a 22-ton cheese sculpture into our next school fundraiser.
Okay. Maybe not that last part, but I love the sentiment. All right, folks, that wraps up our deep dive into Vermont education. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep exploring.